Welcome to Creating Connection with me, your host, Dr. T, where we will navigate being human together. We'll do this through conversations, exploring the challenges and joys of life, uncovering insights and strategies to create meaningful connections, to foster personal growth and find solace in the collective wisdom of our diverse community. Drawing from a unique blend of academic expertise and personal experiences, I will dive into the joys and complexities of aging, death, dying, grief, and body image. With a blend of humor and compassion and understanding, we will forge connections that transcend geographical boundaries and unite us in our shared humanity. When we come together, the possibilities are endless. Creating Connection with me, Dr. T, starts now. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Episode 2. I am going to be talking about one of my favorite topics, and the reason that I am having this be upfront of all the episodes is because mindfulness and meditation are really the cornerstone of everything that I do. I learned about meditation about 8 years ago, and my life has changed for the better. And I hope that some things that I say to you today will be helpful and supportive on your journey as well. So my name is Dr. T. You're listening to Creating Connection on Transformation Talk Radio. This topic, as I said, is near and dear to my heart. How did I start into this? Well, I mentioned on the last episode that I started grad school at age 44. I was not in the habit of being in school, and nor did I ever expect myself to be in a graduate program. About a year in, I was handling all of my stress with all of my previously held bad behaviors. Bad behaviors, I don't like that. That's judgy. Unskillful behaviors. So my drinking had ramped up. My drinking had ramped up. I started smoking again after quitting for I had quit for like 6 years. And then I started again, and eating Sour Patch Kids like they were going out of style. So at work one day, I was talking to a friend and just talking about the stress that I was in. And they said, "What about mindfulness?" And I was literally like, "I will try anything." And I came across the email exchange not too long ago, and it was within minutes that I had signed up for my first meditation course, which was an 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction course. This is a course created by teacher Jon Kabat-Zinn, who I will reference through this program. I've learned a lot from a lot of teachers. So in 2015, I took my first class. It was 8 weeks, and it did not change the level of stress that I was experiencing. But what it did do was change my relationship to stress. So that was the helpful piece, right? I was not any longer I can't stress this enough. Sorry, I got distracted. I can't stress this enough. I did not change any of the stress that I was in. However, meditation and mindfulness helped me with that. I then went on to become a teacher because it changed my life that much. So during the course of my PhD, I was also learning how to teach and facilitate mindfulness-based stress reduction courses. And once I was in that, then I also did a Foundations in Contemplative Care, which is out of the New York Zen Center, which, you know, COVID was stressful in a lot of ways, but it did give me the opportunity to train with some amazing people out there via Zoom. And lastly, I have my certification in the mind-body skills, which is offered through the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. That was under a grant that I was fortunate enough to be in called the Las Vegas Healing Collaborative. So as soon as I learned about meditation and mindfulness, I dove in and I was like, hey, I want to know more. And I want to be able to share this with more people. You'll learn that I get wildly enthusiastic about things. And I love to share those things with people. So that's what I'm doing today on this program. What I did before hopping on today is earlier this week, I had asked our community for questions and asked them to write in to me, like on an Ask Me Anything on Instagram. You can follow me on Instagram at Dr. Dr. period Teresa, Theresa. _B_SKAAR. So if you're not following, and if you didn't catch that, no worries. You can find me on my website, Creating Connection with Dr. Oh my goodness sakes. I'm going to reset, pause. I'm a little excited. Can you tell? So my website is CC with WITH DrTDRT.com. So you can find all of my handles and socials there. So when I asked the community, what was the number one question that came up? Well, it was things like, I tried it and I couldn't get my mind to stop. How do I get my mind to stop? What if I can only meditate for 2 minutes and then I feel my mind wandering off, thinking of to-do lists and tasks? Meditation is almost impossible for me. I have too many racing thoughts. Maybe it's just not for me. And how do you get to your mind to stop thinking? Every time I've tried to meditate, my thoughts are constantly racing. I don't think I'm good at it. So that is the number one question for a reason. And I will tell you that it's not about getting your mind to stop. The brain's like function is to think thoughts. And we have the gift of being able to plan into the future and reminisce about the past. And those are amazing things. What happens is that when we get stuck in those loops, right? We can get stuck in like, oh, I have to go get gas. I have to go get gas. I have to go get gas. Or I have to go to the grocery store. Those are two of my top ones. And then one of my favorite teachers, Joseph Goldstein, ask the question to ask yourself after you're doing that mindful rumination thing, is this useful? So you could ask yourself, is this useful? And so again, to back up, your mind is designed to think thoughts. And the practice of meditation is inviting the attention back to the present moment again and again. So it's not about clearing the mind. There might be some moments of clarity or peace or ease, or there might be some moments where the mind is just very active. And what you do is you just pay attention. You notice that your mind has wandered off and then you come back to the present moment. And I'll talk more about details on how to do that. And so what I would say is the invitation is there's not a right way or a wrong way. You're not doing it wrong. You can do this. Practice, and it is for everyone. So if you notice that your mind's active, notice it and then come back. Meditation teacher Sharon Salzberg wrote this quote, beginning again and again is the actual practice. Not a problem to overcome so that one day we can come to real meditation. And so, you know, I've been meditating consistently for 8 years, and sometimes my mind, it feels like there's just a street fight going on. It's just all over the place and it's messy. And so then I notice that, and then I come back to the present moment. And another question that came up a lot was, is meditation and mindfulness the same thing? And so meditation, wanted to say that meditation is like a broad umbrella term. It encompasses a lot of techniques, and they're all aimed at, you know, training the mind or achieving a sense of awareness or consciousness. It can include practices like meditation, specific types of meditation, like loving kindness meditation. There's something called transcendental meditation. And meditation often involves focusing the attention on a specific object, thought, or breath to cultivate mental clarity, relaxation, and inner peace. And so just to broadly state, there's so many different types, and you might be aware of many of them, but there's three general categories of meditation. Concentrative, that would be like mantras, sound meditation, focusing on an object image, maybe something like repetitive prayers. Expressive meditation is the oldest one on our planet, and it's central to the lives of many indigenous and tribal people and continue to be. It can also include slower movement, things like Indian yoga. And I say specifically that because I'm not talking about like core power yoga. I'm talking about like the tradition, traditional sense, and it's worth looking into the origins of that. There's also Tai Chi and Qigong, and those are movement meditations. It can also be things like dancing and shaking, or, Taylor Swift said it best, you know, shake it off. That is an expressive meditation. And so that might even be something that you notice if you're feeling too agitated to sit, you know, turn on a song or something and just move the body. And I'll get into a little bit more of that down the way. Mindfulness is the third category, and that owes its origin to Siddhartha Gautama. And he's most known to be the Buddha. And that is Vipassana meditation. So that's a Sanskrit word that means awareness. So mindful awareness is like witnessing or noticing whatever's happening in your experience without judging or reacting. And you might want to start paying attention to how many times I say judging, because that comes up so much in my own practice and awareness. Jon Kabat-Zinn, who created the mindfulness-based stress reduction program, he has a quote that I love to describe what mindfulness is. And it is the awareness that emerges through paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally, to the unfolding of experience. So basically, it's like whatever is happening in our lives, we're paying attention and we're noticing those things. And that's where the idea of like busy thoughts coming in, you would just notice, oh, my mind is thinking about the next thing on my to-do list. And then you would just gently come back to the present moment. And it's not easy. Simple, not easy. And this is a really powerful practice. So, and it can be integrated into daily life in many different areas, eating, walking, communicating, and I'll talk about those in more detail later. And so what are other questions? Let's see. Will it require a lot of time and intensity? So time frame, so these practices have been around for, I just blanked on the number. It's in my note, a long, long time, thousands of years. I'm a little dyslexic with numbers, so pardon my blank on that. So these practices are in traditions, right? Like, so they are ancient, it's wisdom that's been passed down. This is nothing new. And so what I love about that is that they show the test of time and they're here to stay. What has happened in the most recent years, since about the 1960s, it's been studied, you know, using research methods. And so you can, and now with technology, there's fMRIs and they can actually see what's happening in the brain. And so I say all of that to let you know that for time and intensity, research shows that the amount of time that is optimal for actually changing the brain waves and your brain and adding to your prefrontal cortex is 20 minutes a day. And that might seem like too much. Some research has shown that some research has shown that you can break that up into 10 minutes and 10 minutes if that is easier. But I say, and many people say, pay attention to your breath for 1 minute. And it doesn't have to be intense. And let's see, another question that came up was mindfulness. Let's see. So what if someone has never meditated before? What advice would you give to them to get started? And so I've alluded to this, like coming back to the present moment, but how do you do that? You do that using anchors that are in the present moment, like your breath, sounds, body sensations. And so why are those so optimal? Because you can never be in a future breath or in a past breath. Sounds are always in the present moment, as are body sensations. So what you would do is you would pay attention to the body breathing and do that non-judgmentally. So if I'm, and we'll practice later together, we'll do a short practice. But if you are paying attention to your breath, what you would do is you would notice your mind wandering, and then you'd say, oh, my mind has wandered, and now I'm coming back to the present moment. Same thing with body sensations or sounds. And the foundations of practice would be postures that work for your body. So setting a schedule or postures that work for your body. What does that mean? Well, you don't have to sit cross-legged. That is a question that came up. You don't have to sit crisscross applesauce in order for it to be effective, although that is one way that you can sit, but you want to find something that works for your body so that you can be alert yet at ease without kind of straining or stressing. You can also lay down. But what the body often, when you're new to meditation, what the body thinks of when you lay down and you close your eyes, the body thinks it's time to go to sleep. So you might get an unintentional nap, which happened to me plenty when I first started. And it just actually lets you know that you're tired. And the foundations of practice is to practice. So when you set a schedule and, you know, find a time in your day that works, make that an appointment for yourself and then practice and choose a practice that works for you. One of those three kind of general areas. It could be movement, it could be mindfulness, or it could be concentrative. And so we are going to head to a break. So you're listening to Creating Connection with Dr. T. This will be a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on meditation and mindfulness, answering a few more questions and jumping into attitudes of mindfulness. See you in a minute.
Do you need help navigating the challenges of aging family members? Michelle Magner is a recognized expert in the field of caregiving. She understands the challenges we face as we care for those we love and shares her experiences with gerontology, dementia, and conscious aging through her podcast, Inspired Caring. Her one-on-one and group coaching programs equip you with the tools to handle stress and burnout with clarity and confidence. Visit michellemagner.com.
Are you ready to branch out, to take a leap of faith, to love yourself and others fully? Hi, I'm Erica Gifford Mills, founder of Balance Symmetry and host of Get Rooted Radio. If you answered yes to even one of the above, then this 12-week course is for you. The Rooted Life Group Coaching Series will give you the tools, techniques, and strength to be intentional in your pursuit of what sets your soul on fire. Find out more about this program on my website, getrootedradio.com.
Tune in on the first and third Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com for Creating Connection with me, Dr. T. We will navigate being human together through conversations, exploring the challenges and joys of life, uncovering insights and strategies to create meaningful connections, and find solace in the collective wisdom of our diverse community. When we come together, the possibilities are endless. Visit me at ccwithdrt.com to learn more.
Here's a quick tip from Jason and Patricia at the Ecosystem Approach Show. This is a new way to approach self-help.
See all problems, challenges, and objectives as energy issues. Determine the energies that are blocking you and remove them. Instead of asking, what do I do? Ask what energies are blocking me.
Say to yourself, I direct all my resources in all dimensions to eliminate. Name the emotions that are blocking you. Some form of fear, insecurity, anxiety.
Take a breath and blow the barriers, the negative energies blocking you, into the processor behind us. Keep doing it.
If you want to hear about our show, A New Way to Approach Self-Help, go to our website, theecosystemapproach.org, and under the radio tab, search for Is Self-Help Obsolete?
Listen to all of our shows because we teach you how to apply energy techniques for everyday life in ways that are practical and useful.
See you Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific or find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
We're back on Creating Connection with me, your host, Dr. T. On this segment, we'll be talking a little bit more about the Q&A because the questions were great. So I want to keep going with that. And I also will be talking about the attitudes of mindfulness. So to go back, one of the questions that came up was, how does mindfulness cross personal and professional spaces, and why is it important? What meditation and mindfulness do, or what mindfulness does, is it allows you to have a space rather than having that knee-jerk reaction of like, oh, you know, this is like an example I like to give is that sometimes my husband will crook his eyebrow in a certain way. And I used to be like, oh, okay, that means we're going to fight. Or have an argument or have a heated discussion, not physically fight. And so we, with mindfulness, I was able to pause and actually go, is that really true? And so I had that little space before I reacted. And that comes in handy in any relationship, whether it's work, personal, or even with yourself, like asking yourself, is this true? And so reacting versus responding versus reacting. And there's a quote that I love that's attributed to Viktor Frankl. And it is, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth, our freedom. And in that quote, what that means is that, and Viktor Frankl wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, and he was actually in a concentration camp. And so he was able to look at this really horrible experience and choose his responses to this situation that he was in. So that's one of the benefits that meditation and mindfulness can give. And I'll be talking about daily habits or tips. That was a question that came up. Someone asked, is breath work a part of meditation practice or being mindful? And breath work is, and meditation are connected in, you know, I mean, we're always breathing and the breath is in the present moment, but there are techniques that people use to bring energy to the body, and that they use like specific breath patterns. And so although it can bring you to the present moment, sometimes it's used to move energy. And that is, and I'm not really well versed on that, but it is, it can be practiced, at, you know, on its own, or it can be in conjunction to cultivate mindfulness. And someone asked, am I too old or too young to start meditating and practicing mindfulness? Which piggybacks onto another question that someone asked about, how do you share these techniques with littles? And I would say you are not, never too old or too young. Too young. Well, I mean, even, you know, even with the littlest littles, you can show them how to do things like one of my favorite things that people have shared with me. I don't have little kids, but it was to have them lay down, and you would put like a stuffy or a stuffed animal on their belly and have them watch the stuffed animal rise and fall. And so that actually is concentrating them on their breath in the present moment. So you're not necessarily talking about the research or, you know, techniques, but you're using things in the surroundings. Another practice that one of my friends used with their children was a, you know, they'd say, pretend to smell a flower, or they might even have like a flower and like smell the flower and then a candle, blow out the candle. And so that also is bringing that breath into awareness. And so that in through the nose and out through the mouth breathing is actually very good for calming the nervous system. And so it is, that is a helpful thing to do with little ones. I came to meditation and mindfulness when I was 45. And I think I've met people all along my path who, are either learning about it, at a later age or, exploring it. What I do always like is when I see younger people who are doing that, I'm like, oh my gosh, what if I would have learned these techniques when I was younger? But I try not to do judgment on that and just say, well, here I am today. And I am so happy to be here to share these tips and tricks with you and things that have made a real difference in my life. One of the questions was, what are the positives that I've seen in myself or others who meditate? I would say it's that... that calming, right? The ability to respond versus that knee-jerk reacting. The ability to maybe say, oh, is this useful? Whether it's a comment, a thought, or whatever, and have that pause. And practicing using meditation helps me in my daily life to create that little bit more mindfulness and spaciousness in my everyday. And one thing I want to mention, because this did come up, is meditation safe for everyone? And I think that it's important to know that it can be contraindicated. If there is a recent traumatic event, a current depressive episode, or maybe even generalized anxiety disorder, studies have showed that long meditation periods can be contraindicated for people who have these type of issues. And all of the training that I've done, all of the classes I've taken, all of the retreats I've been on do ask questions about that, because they will either invite you in to that space, even if you're having some of these issues, or they might say this isn't the right time for you. And I think that is the responsible thing, because everything with meditation and mindfulness, although it can seem like this panacea to, you know, it can solve for so many things, and it really is beneficial in so many ways. But what can be difficult is if you're having one of those if you're having more serious psychological issues without the support of a therapist. So just to know, because what you're doing is that, again, paying attention. So when you're really paying attention to what's going on in the noggin, and if there's some trauma, that can really bring things to the surface. So you're going to want to work with your teacher or with whatever program you're doing. Be aware of your own activity. I will say that for me, I had been practicing for a long time, maybe 4 years at that point, when my husband had a serious accident. And mindfulness really came in handy. When I was out of town and I was hearing, from the social worker at the hospital that he was going into surgery and I wasn't there, you know, I remember like putting my hands on my friend's, you know, she had a granite countertop, and I just felt the coldness of, you know, the contact with that surface to help bring me to the present moment and to not spin out, right? Because there wasn't anything that I could do, which is just the most helpless feeling. But I was able to breathe and be present. And then when I was able to get back home and be with him at the hospital, I was sitting at his bedside, and I was able to, you know, use my breath, be present, acknowledge what was happening in that moment. And so, although that was very stressful and emotional, and he's fine, thankfully, but in that moment, I really was like, oh, okay, this is one of the major benefits of mindfulness for me in that moment. So just pay attention, be aware of what's going on for you. What I want to say is, okay, so mindfulness is an essential tool to help, you know, and it can help with stress management. It's being aware of whatever's happening in the present moment. And it's observing, watching, examining, not being a judge, but a scientist. So being curious. So if you can bring that friendly curiosity to whatever is happening in your life, moment to moment, it can give that bit of spaciousness. A quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, another teacher that I love, is, it's not living on automatic pilot, it's experiencing each moment of your life. And that's a habit that is helpful for all of us. And it's mental training. So think of it like bicep curls for your mind. And really ultimately the invitation is to participate fully to whatever degree you can manage. So if that is 1 minute, if that is a 3 minute shaking and dancing during a song, if it's using a mantra, I would say, you know, try these different techniques. I'm not trained to teach it, but I was trained in transcendental meditation. I like to try all different ways of experiencing meditation so that I can have more tools in my tool belt, and also so that I can understand what other people are talking about. So I don't think there's any one right path. So it's experimenting, being curious with your own life. So what I want to talk about next, and this has been a foundation, this comes from Jon Kabat-Zinn's book, Full Catastrophe Living, and it is in his work that I was taught in. He has attitudinal factors, so attitudes of mindfulness that he says are pillars of mindfulness practice. And I love how he breaks it down, and it's been helpful for me. So I want to share those with you. So the first one is non-judging. And I mentioned that at the beginning because what I noticed is how often, you know, when I sit in silence, how often my mind goes to judging. And you might notice, you know, take, you know, 5-10 minutes out of your day and just pay attention. You know, are you judging? Are you judging yourself? Are you judging other people? You know, what is happening for you? So when you can be impartial and be a witness to your own experience, you know, then you might notice like a constant stream of judging and reacting. And we often get caught up in that. And so again, that goes back to that knee-jerk reaction and that, you know, versus responding, because when we're caught up in our own thoughts, we're just going to have at it and we might not be able to step back. So notice judging. Judging was even in the questions that were asked, right? Like, is this for me? Maybe I'm not good at it. And really, truly, that's a judgment. And so if you can notice like, oh, my mind's going here, and then then going like, oh, interesting, I'm judging. But then don't judge the judging, because that is the next step, right? So you might notice that you're being judgmental, and then you're like, oh crap, I'm being judgmental. And just notice that. Another pillar is patience. So allowing yourself to accept the fact that sometimes things, you know, must unfold in their own time. So in practice or in this pillar, we remind ourselves to not be impatient. Because we're maybe tense or agitated, we give room to have these experiences. So allowing them to be there. There's a great poem called The Guest House by Rumi. I haven't attached that to anything, but if you look it up, it's Rumi. It's one of my favorites because, you know, we're having these experiences anyway. So if we can have patience with them. Beginner's mind is next. And this is one that is, again, so powerful, right? Because in beginner's mind, you are in this moment, because this moment has never happened before. And even though I've talked about these things for so long, this is a new moment. And that is so powerful when you can bring that gift of beginner's mind to people in your life and to yourself, so that we're not getting stuck in the rut of kind of like, remember when I said like my husband's eyebrow would crook? A beginner's mind is like, oh, interesting. A new favorite word. Oh, interesting. His eyebrows crooked. I wonder what's going on for him, versus like, it, you know, assuming that it's that he's irritated. And so think about that. If you could bring beginner's mind to really any area of your life and the power of that, like a conversation, trying a new task, maybe trying a task that you've done a million times, but this is the first time in this moment that you're doing that. And how can that aliven or freshen for you? Developing, and then the next one is trust, developing basic trust in yourself and your feelings. And that is like trusting that you can be with these things that bubble up, trusting that you are, you know, able to make mistakes, and that you can trust your intuition rather than looking outside of yourself for someone else's experience. So, you know, letting yourself like actually connect with that. non-striving. Meditation's only goal is for you to be yourself. And the irony is that you already are. So this, you know, this, if you go to meditation, you think, I'm going to get relaxed and control my pain or be a better person, you've actually, then you're striving for something. And so whatever is here, going back to, you know, non-judging and beginner's mind. So whatever is here, you're not striving. And so just like knowing that you're okay in this moment, because mostly if you check in with yourself, you are okay in this moment. And then acceptance, seeing things as they actually are in the present moment. If you have a headache, accepting that you have a headache. And this is a tie to something. There's a story called the second, like a parable, I guess. I don't know, but it's called the second arrow. And so, you know, things in life are going to be hard. Challenges are going to happen. Stress is going to happen. And you don't have to add to what is already going on. Just noticing like, oh yeah, I have a headache versus like, why do I have a headache? This is terrible. I can't do all the, you know, all of these things. Cause then you're getting, you know, the third and fourth arrows of this situation. You're actually creating more suffering for yourself in that moment. And you don't want to try and force situations to be the way we'd like them to be. Because again, we can plan for the future. We can look at the past, but really today in this moment is all that we have. And acceptance in this way sets the stage for accepting your life, no matter what's happening. And lastly, letting go. So when we start paying attention to the inner experiences, there might be certain thoughts and feelings and situations that the mind wants to hold on to. So there's things that we might try to get rid of or prevent or protect ourselves from having. So we learn to let go and let our experience be what it is. It's letting be without grasping or pushing away. And, you know, you could picture, sometimes this is helpful, like picture like holding on to a pen. Like it's like, we're holding on. But if we just like let be, we can just open-handedly let the pen be. And so, you know, like this is a great one because I did a post on the middle of the nightclub. So maybe if you find yourself unable to sleep, you can, you know, rail against that and you can say, oh, like, I can't sleep. But if you're able to be like, oh, I'm not sleeping. I'm not feeling sleepy. What can I do instead? Then you have space to make different decisions. So these attitudes are, they're cultivated like when you practice and they're not independent of each other. And so some people, and I've done this with a couple of them myself, I'll pick like non-judging and I'll just work with that for a few days or like focus on that for my meditation. So, you know, and then all of them are interlinked and follow onto each other. And I do want to do a quick practice before we take a break. So if you are listening to this in the car or somewhere where you should not close your eyes, please don't do that. But for the rest of you, if you have a moment, let's just, we've talked a lot about it, but really the way in is through experiencing. So finding a position that feels supportive where you can be alert yet at ease. Lowering the gaze or closing the eyes. Whatever feels comfortable to you in this moment. And take just some time to pay attention to the body. The body, whether you're sitting or standing, you might even be walking. If you're walking, I also don't recommend closing your eyes. But I will leave those decisions to you, but be safe. So noticing the body, you can notice points of contact. You might notice air temperature, heat or coolness. There might be a sense of sensation, pulsing, tingling, or there might be no sensation. So again, it's bringing curiosity in this moment to the body as it is right now, not as you wish it would be, not as it was before, but right now in this moment. And can you bring that kind curiosity and maybe even a little humor to the experience of the body in this moment? And moving the attention now to the body breathing. Breathing, knowing that you're breathing. The breath is with us 24/7. It's a life force. And often it's out of our awareness. So what is it like to just bring your attention to the body breathing in this moment? Breathing in, knowing you're breathing in. Breathing out, knowing you're breathing out. And when the mind wanders, just gently bringing it back to the breath, to this moment. And as you feel ready, maybe wiggling the fingers and toes and opening the eyes if they've been closed, there's a little mini mindfulness moment for you. I'll let you kind of marinate in that and we'll go to break. So you're listening to Creating Connection with me, Dr. T. And when we come back, we'll wrap up with some practical tips to incorporate more mindfulness in your day. Stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Crystal Coach Show, sharing clarity, guidance, and practical wisdom with me, Anahata, every first and third Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. On The Crystal Coach Show, we channel divine wisdom through stories of service, spirituality, and stones for self-care. Feel connected and reside in the vibration of love. For more information and to connect with me, visit TheCrystalCoach.com. That's TheCrystalCoach.com.
Tune in to Reinventing You with me, Danielle Silverman, on the second and fourth Monday each month at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. In today's world of ever-constant evolution, the only career change that matters is when what you do matches who you are. On Reinventing You, you'll find concrete tools to help you embrace change and feel optimistic and inspired about your future. It's your vision, your life. Be passionate about it.
Tune in on the first and third Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com for Creating Connection with me, Dr. T. We will navigate being human together through conversations, exploring the challenges and joys of life, uncovering insights and strategies to create meaningful connections, and find solace in the collective wisdom of our diverse community. When we come together, the possibilities are endless. Visit me at ccwithdrt.com to learn more.
Join the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each month as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia Stephanie is a spiritual teacher, passionate speaker, published author, and founder of the Empower Network. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Into the peace we crave, find your freedom in addiction recovery with me, your host, Tanya D., the first Monday of each month at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. As we take you on a spiritual life recovery coach journey and share unique holistic approaches, I will provide a sympathetic listening ear and solutions while helping those affected by addiction. I get it. Enough is enough. If you're ready for help in creating calm in your recovery life, visit thepeacewecrave.com today.
We're back on Creating Connection with me, your host, Dr. T. And this segment, we'll be talking about actions you can take to bring mindfulness into your life. So as I mentioned in last episode, I always want something that you can leave with, that you can, you know, start doing these things in your own life. And so I want to briefly touch on formal versus informal practice. So meditation practice is that, you know, in taking time out of each day to intentionally sit, stand, or lie down, focus on the breath, body sensations, those type of things. So that's taking time out of that. Informal practice involves bringing mindful awareness to daily activities. And so this is a way that you can start bringing these things into your day. Informal practice can be anything like when I was teaching nurses, especially over COVID, washing their hands. So finding something that you do all day, every day, or multiple times a day, and using that as your mindfulness break, and just paying attention to like the water, the sensation of soap, and things like that. That is a informal practice that you can do. You could start the day, just pausing, taking a couple of breaths before you pick up your phone, or really anytime before you pick up your phone. You might just pause and just take a breath, and then pick up your phone and get on with your day. It can be a small step, but that it can have a lot of impact, because you might notice like, oh, what's happening in my body before I pick up my phone? Or is my mind racing immediately when I wake up? Mindful breathing throughout the day, you can just pause and take a few breaths. I don't know about you, but for me, even that small pause we did before the break was very helpful in regulating my system. I had done a formal meditation practice this morning, but just pausing and knowing like, oh my gosh, I feel all of this excitement to share all these things with you and do this so fast. Pausing, take a few breaths, breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. You can feel the sensation. And it's a simple practice that you can do to bring you back to the present moment. One of my friends, like during a meeting, they'll hold their hands and I don't know, like now I look like I'm doing a cheer, but underneath a table or in a meeting. And so bringing that attention to their hands through holding their own hands. So if you're in the midst of a hectic schedule, if you're in a meeting, just take a couple mindful breaths and just see what it does for your body. For mindful eating, when you're having a meal, you know, you might try to have an entire mindful meal, but that can be really difficult. So I would say try to savor at least one bite of, a meal or a snack, paying attention to the flavors, textures, and aromas. Pausing and eating mindfully enhances, it might enhance the enjoyment of food, but it can support shifting your eating habits. One of my students, we did a mindful eating exercise and he was like, oh my gosh, I have had this snack every day, and slowing down, he's like, I don't think I like it. So, you might be curious about that. And again, bring, those attitudes that we talked about in the last section of non-judgment and beginner's mind. And if you can do that to a meal, that savoring just one bite. Mindful movement. Again, if you find it challenging to sit still for meditation, or the mind is just really active, try mindful walking, dancing, swimming, or exercising. So that would be an attention focusing practice, playing music, if you are so gifted. I am not. Doing anything with your full attention. So that would be like not necessarily listening to a podcast while you're doing these things, but really paying attention. If you're walking, what does it feel like to have your feet moving? How does your body, is there a breeze? What are you noticing around you? So really paying attention when you're moving. If you're doing something like exercising, noticing like what it feels like to lift that weight, or anything that you're paying attention to. I don't know why I was going to start going into like exercise right now, but paying attention. And so even if you're doing this and paying attention to the body for 1 to 5 minutes during one of your like either walking, exercising, dancing, it's an excellent way to bring attention to the present moment. And it's, and really, some of our attention is in our minds, right? And so it's like these busy minds and dropping down and noticing like the body and noticing how it feels is really important to start listening, because the body will give us all sorts of clues. Cues to what's going on. You might notice things in your body before you even notice them registering in your mind. Mindful communication. I have many training sessions on this and have worked with people in all different walks of life on mindful communication. And this is something that often is, you know, underestimated, right? If we can bring mindfulness to our communication relationships personally and professionally, you can start by bringing again that non-judgmental curiosity, you know, something that I'm saying, like, bring it to yourself. But what happens when you're in connection with someone and bringing non-judgmental curiosity to what that person's saying? And I would say even when, or especially when you think you already know what they're going to say, and this can be in long-term relationships or, you know, that you've known this person forever and you just know that this is what they're going to say. What happens if you bring that non-judgmental curiosity to, like, I don't know what they're going to say. This is a whole new moment. And it actually can enhance empathy and connection with others and connection we talked a lot about in the last episode. So what is it like to, you know, pause, take that breath, notice if your mind's racing in that communication to say what's on your mind, and actually like going like, huh, I don't know what they're going to say and I don't know how I'm going to respond. So, you know, let's just see what unfolds. And a practice that I love is arriving in each moment. So, you know, we're always trying, you know, it can be that tendency, like, get to the next place and I don't have enough time or I have too much to do. And so what would it be like to take that a pause, right? You know, arriving in each moment, that could be before you get into your car. If you're driving to and from work, like pausing, you know, maybe like just taking a couple of breaths or taking a couple of breaths before you walk into the next room or into that next meeting. Again, I was working with a group of nurses and we were talking about the power of pausing between each patient room because, you know, it can be that like next. And, you know, how am I doing to get everything done in my day? But just taking a couple of breaths helps that reset to this moment and this time, right? So that it's not, it's just not rushed. And so maybe practicing. So taking a couple of these things, you can do small practices and maybe pick one. I wouldn't say pick all of them, but pick one to bring into your daily routine. And you might find that mindfulness becomes more of a natural part of your life. And it is a powerful tool for managing stress, enhancing well-being, and allowing yourself to the gift of the present moment. And you can practice with me each week. I offer a free live guided meditation on Zoom. It's at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific. And you can head over to my website, ccwithdrt.com, and you can sign up and get the link for that, which I would hope that you would join me, because sometimes practicing in community is like, it's a different feeling than trying to do it on your own. So would love to have you there. And if you'd like to have me come talk to a team or your work or your, or, you know, friends and family, please reach out to me on my website, because this is truly a remarkable tool that has made a difference in my life. And I hope that it makes a difference in yours. On our next episode, I will be inviting a couple of my teachers to come on, and we'll talk about different ways of meditating and techniques to add to your toolkit. And I have not gotten here on my own, so I always love to share who I've learned with and from, and look forward to introducing you to some of my favorite people next week. All right, until next time, this is Creating Connection with Dr. T, and we'll see you on October 18th. Have a great day. Thank you for listening to Creating Connection with me, Dr. T. You can join me by tuning in on the first and third Wednesdays every month at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where we will navigate being human together. Being human means that we all have a body, and we will all experience loss, grief, and aging if we're lucky.
Let's join together on this journey of exploration, support, and mutual learning. I love bringing people together, and on Creating Connection, we are a conversation away from understanding another person and, quite frankly, ourselves. For more information, visit ccwithdrt.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers.